And with KXL, of course, the Keystone XL pipeline, which crosses through South Dakota and Nebraska, there are still protests going on. And one of the, Jocelyn Charger, who was one of the youth leaders at the Dakota Access Pipeline protest in Standing Rock, she is also, I think today, facing, she's going to court. She was arrested for protesting the KXL pipeline there in South Dakota as well.
Well, we'll keep her in our thoughts and prayers, and that'll have to be the last word because we are all out of time. Once again, thank you, Jacqueline.
Thank you.
That's it for Wednesday Talk Radio. Bye, everybody. Stay tuned.
Mother Nature, she's the daughter of God and the soul.
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Portland is a
black live
disaster.
Bad.
Eclectic Pandemic
is a community-involved program highlighting all the planet's life forms and humanity while choosing all music relating to the topic.
Eclectic Pandemic.
Politically correct or not, no judgment without bias or us all.
Eclectic Pandemic.
503@gmail.com every fourth Monday, 11 p.m. to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Welcome to Inside Washington County. I'm Rob Solomon. Thank you for joining us for part two of our dynamic discussion on racism in Washington County. We have our panelists back from last week. We have our co-host. And here we go, right into the questions. The immunologist who leads the COVID-19 response in the United States said just this past Sunday, that the undeniable effects of racism have led to unacceptable health disparities that especially hurt African Americans, Hispanics, and Native Americans during the pandemic. Quote, COVID-19 has shone a bright light on our own society's failings, Dr. Anthony Fauci said during graduation ceremony for Emory University. What inequities has the pandemic revealed in Washington County? Wajid, what have you seen in this county that have been revealed due to the pandemic?
I think, you know, we collectively as a community, you know, with the New Portland Foundation and many other coalitions that we supported and helped and addressed. I think, you know, Washington County and Multnomah County has been one of the best, in my opinion, you know, as somebody that understands, you know, the American Muslims nationwide, that we have been in a very positive way, you know, have integrated everything that is necessary, you know, to address, you know, the COVID-19 vaccination and integrated the resources to heal our marginalized communities. I have participated in many panels. We have contributed in terms of the collective effort, you know, of the coalitions, Latinos, African American, and Muslims, and Jewish, and Christians, and many other indigenous people, and many others, you know, towards really addressing, you know, the equity and the inclusion in Washington County and many other counties, you know, in the metropolitan area.
Thank you, Ashid. I think that things have been, well, how do we say, avoided or not talked about. And it seems to me that the pandemic revealed some of these things that have been hidden. In a show several weeks ago with the mayor of King City, I was struck by one of his comments. Mayor Gibson said the inequities that have been revealed by the pandemic have just been incredible. I'm sorry, it's a paraphrase. I can't remember his exact words. But I'm wondering what you've seen that might have been not so clearly visible before the pandemic. And I'm thinking of health inequities, inequities in education, but I'm wondering what you've seen. Dr. Whitebear.
If you don't mind, I'd like to add one thing before Dr. Whitebear starts.
Go ahead.
I think before, you know, before the end of the year, December 29th, that panel discussion that we sponsored with the New Portland Foundation, I think there was a lot of uncertainties among our county officials, you know. Mm-hmm. But the moment we brought, you know, this challenges into the public square, and we brought our experts from the ethnic and cultural perspectives, the moment I think the county leadership start to be aware and understand, including the Oregon Health Authority. And this is why I'm saying I'm comparing what happened in Washington County and Multnomah County in comparison to the nation approach. We really bridged the gap, and we have to stay positive and focused that Oregon has responded in a positive way, especially in Multnomah County and Washington County.
Thank you. Dr. Whitebear?
I think one of the things that showed up that in the COVID data for Oregon in particular is that it's impacting Pacific Islanders heavily as well, especially in the area up in Washington County area. And the way that the data is collected showed like the impacts were greater, right? Like depending on if people went to the hospital or not, if they were dying, if they were recovering, and it impacted Black, Latinx, Indigenous, and Pacific Islander communities heavily, right? And that's to do with those historic not having access to healthcare in the first place or health insurance. Exactly. Some of the other things that were really notable to me, like just thinking locally in Oregon, is the way that it was spreading in farm worker communities was really sad, in the access to precaution information being available in languages that folk had access to was not there. And so if things are only in English, which was happening early on, it's impacting people that speak other languages, whether it's Spanish or Arabic or any other languages. So not being able to access precaution information led to higher rates. And then it led to some comments or assumptions like this is occurring in this community because they're not taking precautions, right? And so building off stereotypes around, especially with the farm worker areas. And that was really frustrating to see, because if you know what's going on, you're like, that's not why. It's because like they don't have access to the information or to like,
exactly.
Or to mask or to like water. And so some of the things showing up for Indigenous communities in Oregon, especially around Warm Springs, was the access to clean water. And they finally have some movement going for water access, right, over in Warm Springs. But if you don't have access to water to wash your hands, like that's an issue with COVID, right? That's one of the main things. If you're out picking the vegetables that everybody's enjoying for their dinners as they get to work from home, and you don't have a mask, or even being told like about these, like how to protect yourself from COVID, that's an issue, right? And so there was a lot of those kind of inequities that were showing up, especially for communities of color locally, that reflect some of the national stuff. the rates of kids who were getting severe reactions to COVID was higher as well for kids of color. So it created this perception of who is, again, like I said earlier, who is considered disposable, like with the drive to push people to go back to school, like knowing these health inequities, we know exactly what kids they're talking about. And so those kind of things were showing up as well. I could keep going on and on. I did a whole thing about this as part of my campaign with the COVID data and the inequities showing up. But I think just those basic things, like, and how it was really bringing to light some stereotypes about communities too.
Certainly, and validating the stereotypes, sadly. Yeah. Rosa, your thoughts about what was revealed in what inequities were revealed in our county through this pandemic?
Thank you again for that question, Rob. One of the studies that I participated on with respect to the disproportionate impact of COVID-19 on communities of color had to do specifically with housing. One of the things that was revealed because of COVID-19, and it's interrelated, of course, and connected to the loss of income, because many people in communities of color work in service jobs. And those were some of the first jobs that were lost because and throughout the pandemic. And homelessness has escalated disproportionately for people of color, as well as the inability to pay rent. If folks can't pay their rent and the moratorium ends, and there's still this concern about the moratorium that is supposed to end June 30th, and if folks have not been able, even with some of the transitioning back to work, if folks have not been able to catch up on their rent, then they too are subject to homelessness. And we are aware that that has increased dramatically. So in terms of housing, that's one of the areas that the COVID-19 has really shined a light on, is that people are living in communities of color because of acts of racism. People are really living on the edge. And the pandemic revealed that very openly for others to see in pretty much of an undeniable way. And perhaps pre-pandemic, the homelessness and the homeless camps were out there. But indeed, in Multnomah County, I'm unclear as to the level in Washington County, but I do know based on a study that I recently participated in, it has escalated precipitously in Multnomah County. And whether it was there or not, the pandemic has certainly revealed it in a way that we were previously not so much aware of. I think that was a great question with respect to one
Rob,
of the...
Rob, I'd like to add, I'm very thankful to both sisters for their answers. But at the same time, you know, I think, you know, the biggest challenge, you know, for us, you know, it's not the lack of resources, that is the lack of the integration, you know, by design. You know, the government, you know, the federal government, the state government, the county government have all the resources and have all the money. What they lack is the cultural competent, you know, managers and supervisors and community leaders, you know, to integrate all these resources to reach out and maximize this return of investment, you know, to the communities. There are a lot of resources that are wasted. There are a lot of wasted resources. There are a lot of resources that can reach many people. And the more we push and the more we have great people like you, my beloved sisters and brothers, the better, I think, county government, state government will be able to do their job in a proper way. Today, you know, I'm speaking here I'm in touch with many leaders in the nation. You know, there are Oregon, in my opinion, Washington County, Multnomah County have done great job, but also there are room for improvements, you know, to be able to integrate the many resources. So, and the story has to be told and the story has to continue as well towards that complete holistic understanding of healing and unifying.
That's the goal. Hector,
yes.
Next question.
Before I jump to the next question, Rob, if I may, for our audience to understand what we just discussed, here's my story in regards to the COVID and Latino community. If you were a Latino, you were 8 times more likely to be infected with COVID-19 and 3 times more likely to die from it. That's the impact that COVID had. And Dr. Saeed is absolutely correct. We tripped over ourselves trying to roll out the vaccine on how we're going to deal with this pandemic. In our healthcare system, the local county health departments have the oversight for contagious diseases in the community. And they were like the last ones to have input here. My doctor, I couldn't even go to my doctor to get vaccinated for this pandemic. That's pretty sad. So yeah, we screwed up the rollout. We screwed up the whole process. We ended up having facilities like the Muslim Educational Trust Center to actually have a vaccinating clinic. And we did, vaccinated hundreds of people in you know, 20 different languages in order to pull this off. But Dr. Saeed is absolutely correct. Culturally and linguistically appropriate programming was lacking in this whole rollout process. So, sorry to interrupt there, Rob.
No. I wanted your perspective and I appreciate it because it's hit all disadvantaged folks. I mean, it's not just one group, and yes, lots has been revealed. Go ahead, Hector. Next question.
Next question is kind of a fun one, sort of a change, a breath of fresh air. I'd like to hear from our community activists and wonderful guests. What is your social justice concerns in your county or in our state? And let's start with Dr. Saeed.
I was hoping that you will ask any.
What are your top social justice concerns?
My main concern, to be honest with you, my beloved brother Hector, is really the same concern that we, I started 35 years ago when I was young as an international student, is how we can build the bridges and of understanding, and how can we help unifying our approach into a holistic understanding of what it means to be, you know, a good human being. You know, today we feel, you know, the moment we feel that we are moving in the right directions, the moment we feel that we are having stumbling blocks, you know, I mean, I have been, you know, the last 3 weeks, you know, I have been, you know, in self-isolation about what's going on in Palestine, and you know, and what's going on in this world, you know, I love my Jewish brothers and sisters, you know, I understand, you know, that for me as a Yemeni American, you know, we have indigenous Jewish people in Yemen. My mother told me so much wonderful stories, you know, how Yemeni Muslims and Jewish lived and coexist together. And what's happened worldwide is what is happening today in our Washington County or our state of Oregon or our nation. You know, it is the same struggle of cancellation of each other. You know, it is very important that again we need to waken up that conscious mind. You know, that conscious mind, you know, that will be able to help us understand the success of my beloved sister Lohoy, my beloved sister Rosa, my beloved brother Rob, my beloved brother Hector, is the success of mine as well, you know. This conscious mind that we need to address is the key factor that will be able to bring, you know, our story to a complete, you know, understanding that, you know, that success comes through collaboration. Today, Washington County is different than Washington County that I understand 30 years ago. Today is much better, positive leadership, leaders been elected in the Board of Commissioners, yet we still have some challenges. So it's not the issue of electing only the leaders, the issue of really addressing, as Sister Rosa and Sister Lohei has said, addressing the root causes. You know, how can we improve this system, this man-made? I'm not speaking from a gender perspective. I'm speaking from, you know, men that, men that corrupted our society. It's not women, it's the men that corrupted our society. Behind every corruption is men, you know?
I know an awful lot of women who would agree with that statement.
Yeah, and there, this is why in our perspective as Muslims, we don't have the original sin. The original sin is not the fallen of humanity because of Eve. It is because of Adam that he ate from the forbidden tree. And it was Adam that caused that headaches. I'm speaking from a religious, spiritual perspective. So therefore, let us encourage our sisters, competent sisters, to take leadership. I'm raised by a great mother. I'm raised around 9 sisters. Today, my goodness is because of my beloved mother and my beloved sisters that made me understand how to look at things in a more optimistic, holistic, and practical way.
Amen. Dr. Rosa.
Sorry for that delay. I was trying to unmute. I just wanted to affirm and to thank Brother Waji for his comments, particularly with respect to going forward in a with positivity and with a more holistic look at what issues are confronting us. In terms of your question, if I can rephrase it, not reframe it, but rephrase it, what am I most concerned about as we go forward in terms of social justice? Am I understanding the question, Hector?
Yes.
All right. I think that based on, first and foremost, family, my family life as a mother, my work in terms of research and social services, and as well as the work that I do as an activist, I remain concerned both pre-pandemic and certainly in the throes of the COVID-19 pandemic, I remain concerned about what I describe as the social determinants of health, which are all impacted by structural and institutional racism. These social determinants of health, in turn, they are pervasive and they are deeply embedded in our society. They affect where we live. Again, I go back to the housing issue. These social determinants of health determine how we learn, our educational system. They determine where we work, our employment. They determine in large part where we play, where we worship. And all of these things come together in a system or a structure that have an impact on how we live, how much money we have, whether we are ever able to accumulate a comfortable form of living or any form of wealth. And so as we go forward, when we look at a structure where all of these social determinants come together, we have to be concerned about how we holistically, and I think Brother Waji really nailed that down in a way that I could hear him and understand what he's saying. We have to deal with those things as we go forward, because if we're not, and if we don't effectively deal with them in a social way, in a legislative manner, in every way possible, we may continue to have something like the disparities that we're now dealing with COVID-19. This won't be the first time, won't be the last time, I'm sorry, certainly not the first, that we deal with the murder of an unarmed citizen by the police. It won't be the last time that we experience the inequities in education and in housing. So I continue to look at the full scope of these social determinants of health. And I do, I am kind of really focused on health inequities. And they do, in fact, they do affect everything. When I think again back on the question that Rob asked about George Floyd, clearly there was a man who found himself in a situation, a man who did have some very serious underlying health issues and economic issues. And so, again, that holistic approach is very, very important. And I think that in terms of trying to get a handle on what we're dealing with, I think that's a pretty outstanding question, Hector.
Dr. Whitebear, what are your top social justice concerns?
Yeah, I'm like, boy, how much time do we have?
Not enough.
How do you narrow it down, Hector? There's so many things, and I would say that just I appreciate everything that's been shared so far in answering this question. And really it comes down for me to how do we get to a place where like we actually respect each other and view each other as being worthy of dignity, respect, and like life. And I don't mean that like in a romanticized way, and I don't mean it where people just write it on a post or they just have it as a slogan somewhere. I really mean that in a way where people feel it in their bones and in their spirits. And when they speak those kind of words and how they act, it's reflected in their minds as well. Like that is something that people truly have for each other. How do we get there? I don't know, but I do have faith in us as people that we can. Things haven't been the way they are forever. And actually it's been a shorter amount of time in the long history of humanity that we're in the situation we're in, that we're seeing in this country and in this state. For me, it will help address some of those social justice concerns, like the houselessness that we see. It'll help the way that people that aren't without a home are viewed as like, pretty much a lot of times as trash or as something to clear out of the way, right? So that's a huge issue right now, a huge social justice issue. I think about the continued exploitation of people who are undocumented and the way that people are either locked up or pushed into jobs where they're not paid or treated well in factories or in field work. That's been going on for a really long time. I think about murdered and missing Indigenous women, as I said earlier, as being viewed as disposable. I think about the violence and murders of trans people because of existing as who they are and how that basic lack of respect for somebody's life, just because somebody views their gender identity as not acceptable. I think about the Black Lives Matter movement and why it exists, because of the police violence on Black men especially, but also Black women who are often left out of the conversation. That same violence that faces Indigenous men at extraordinary rates. There's just so many I think for me, it's hard to pick a top one or even a couple top ones because they're all connected by those same systems and the same underlying piece of like how people are viewed because of their identities. And in the context of this conversation, it's racial identity in the way that racism shows up as a system, going back to what Rosa said earlier about that it being a system and not just thinking about it at an individual level and saying like, well, I'm not racist. And it's like, nobody's accusing an individual. Well, I mean, if you're gonna be acting racist, you probably are racist, but like, it's not an attack on people necessarily. It's an understanding that these systems are created in ways that advantage some people over others, and oftentimes it's at the expense of people's lives that are people of color. And so I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, no, the lack of disrespect of one another and acknowledging respect and dignity for each other is clearly the answer to all of those issues that you raised. And Absolutely. Rob, back to you.
To the panel, thank you very much for joining us. Rosa, for joining us for the first time. Luili and Waji, thank you so much for returning.
And thank you, Rob. And thank you, Hector, too.
Hector, I can't thank you enough for co-hosting, for putting the panel together. I'm grateful to our listeners. If you have any comments about these two shows, boy, we'll be doing some more. You know, this is a big topic, but we're interested in hearing from you. Feel free to send an email to rob@insidewashco.org, and we'll be hearing from you. You'll be hearing from us.
And I'm very thankful to our sisters, Lohi and Rosa. Rosa and Lohi, always nice to see you, my dear.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Mark Berry.
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week.
And in fact, the people who study this say that, you know, conspiracy theories are not the product of a disordered mind, but in fact of a mind that's seeking to impose order on a very confused and troubled universe.
Today, Alex Wise of Sea Change Radio interviews Rolling Stone senior writer Tim Dickinson.